tells him to go slag himself.
If you look at it properly, I was trying to do you a favour. He mutters over at Milia as he huddles down under Pax's smelly armpit. You're about as pretty as a gargoyle's wart, so when else would you get a chance to snuggle with the likes of me? Ungrateful sow. Mustang and the other girls snort their derision. Then the quiet of the night and the chill of the open ice plain bite into us, and we grow silent. Come morning. Mustang and I shiver into one another, and a new snowfall threatens to ruin our plan, burying us even deeper in the plain. But the wind is manageable, and the flakes do not bury us too deep as they spin through the air. I'm first up, though I do not move, and soon after I yawn away the last vestige of sleep. My army wakes organically, one student stirring and grumbling into another, till there's a snake of sniffing and coughing gulls buried together in a shallow tunnel beneath the snow's surface. I can't see them, but I hear their waking despite the sound of the snowstorm's wind. Ice formed around me in the night, outside my thick cloaks. Mustang's hands are inside my pelts, warm against my side. Her breath heats my neck. As I stir, she yawns and straightens, pulling a little away as she stretches cat-like under the snow. Snow crumbles in between us.
Gory hell, this is miserable.
Dax, Milia's companion mutters. I can't see him in our snow tunnel. Mustang nudges me. We can just barely see Tactus curled into the hollow of Pax's armpit. The two men snuggle together and wake like lovers, only to flinch away from one another when their ice-crusted eyelids flutter open.
Wonder which is Romeo?
Mustang whispers, her throat raspy. I chuckle and carve a hole in the roof of our tunnel to see that my band of 24 is alone in the plains, except for early morning horse scouts in the distance. They'll not be a problem. Wind rolls in from the North River, biting deep into my face.
You ready for this?
Mustang asks me with a grin as I bring my head back into our shelter. Or are you too cold? It was colder in the lock when I first tricked you, I say, smiling. Ah, the old days. All part of my master plan to win your trust, little man. She smirks mischievously. She sees the worry in my eyes, so she grips my thigh and comes close so the others can't hear. Think I'd be squatting here with you in the snow if this plan could go belly up? Negative. But I'm freezing my balls off, and the wind is dying. So let's go, Reaper. I give the countdown, and we're up, snow crumbling around us, wind stinging our faces, and sprinting the 100 meters across the plains to the walls. All 24 of us. Silent again. The wind comes in fits. We carry the long tree between us, huddling tight to it, as we did in the night when it shared our tunnel with us. It's heavy. But we're 24, and Pax's parents gave him the genes to knock over bloody damn horses. Panting, legs burning, gritting as the wood weighs down our shoulders in the deep snow. It's a trudge. A shout comes from the wall, a lonely, hollow call that echoes over the still winter morning. More shouts. Still few. Barks. Confusion. An arrow whistles past. Then another. It's amazing how quiet the world is as the arrows sail, carrying death. The wind has faded again. Sun peaks from behind a cloud layer, and we're bathed with morning warmth. We're at the wall. Shouts spread beyond the stone fortification from their towers. A signal horn, barking of dogs. Snow falls from the parapets as archers lean over the stone battlements. An arrow shivers in the wood by my hand. Someone goes down bloody like Dax. Then Pax roars the word, and he, Tactus, and five more of our strongest take the long wood beam we cut from the tree trunk and shove the tip as hard as they can into the wall. They hold it there, at an angle. They are roaring from the burden. It's still 5 meters short of the top of the wall, but I'm already sprinting up the thin slope. Pax grunts like a boar as he heaves against the angled strain. He's shouting, roaring. Mustang is right behind me, then Milia. I almost slip. My balance and Helldiver hands keep me scrabbling up the knotted wood. In our fur, we look like squirrels, not wolves. An arrow hisses through my cloak. I'm against the wall at the top of the wobbling beam. Pax and his boys roar gutturally from the exertion. Mustang is coming. I cup my hands. She stirrups her foot at the run, and I hurl her up the last 5 meters to clear the battlements. Her sword slashes, and she screams like a banshee. Then Milia launches the same way off my hands, and the rope she has tied to her waist dangles after her. She anchors up top as I use it to pull myself up the last 5 meters. The wooden beam crashes to the ground behind me. My sword is out. It's mayhem. House Ceres was caught unaware. They've never had an enemy on the battlements. And there are three of us, screaming and slashing. Rage and excitement fill me, and I begin my dance. They only have bows. It's been months since they've used swords. Ours aren't sharp or fused with electricity, but cold durosteel is nasty to take in any form. The dogs are the hardest to manage. I kick one in the head, throw another off the battlements. Milia is down. She bites a dog in the neck and punches it in the balls till it whimpers off. Mustang tackles someone off the battlements. I slide tackle one of the archers as he levels his bow at her. Outside, Pax shouts for me to open the gates. He's actually crying for combat. I follow Mustang down into their courtyard, jumping from the parapet down to where she fights a big Ceres student. I end the boy with my elbow and take my first glimpse of the bread fortress. The castle is an unfamiliar design. A courtyard leading to several buildings and a huge keep where the bread bakes, making my stomach rumble. But all that matters to me is the gate. We rush to it. Shouts from behind us. Too many for us to fight. We get to the gate just as 3 dozen House Ceres students run at us across the courtyard from their keep. "Hurry!" Mustang shouts. Hurry!" Milia shoots arrows at the enemy from the parapets. Then I open the gate. "Pax Autelamanus! Pax Autelamanus!" He shoves me aside. He's shirtless, massive, muscled, screaming. His hair is painted white and spiked with sap to form 2 horns. A piece of wood, as long as my body, serves as his club. The House Ceres students flinch back. Some fall, some stumble. A boy screams as Pax thunders close.
"Pax Autelamanus! Pax Autelamanus!"
He wants no nickname, as he charges forward like a minotaur possessed. When he hits the mass of House Ceres students, it is ruin. Boys and girls fly through the air like chaff on reaping day. The rest of my army sprints in behind the mad bastard. They begin to howl, not because I told them to, not because they think they are Severo's howlers, but because it was the sound they heard when my soldiers cut their way out of horses' bellies, the sound that made their hearts sink as they were conquered. Now it's their turn to howl as they turn the battle into a mad melee. Pax screams his name, and he screams mine, as he conquers the citadel almost single-handedly. He picks a boy up by the leg and uses him as a club. Mustang drifts about the battlefield like some Valkyrie, enslaving those who lie stunned on the ground. In 5 minutes, the ovens and citadel are ours. We shut their gates, howl, and eat some bloody damn bread. I free the House Diana slaves who helped me capture the fortress and take a moment with each to share a laugh. Tactus sits on some poor boy's back, braiding the prisoner's hair in girlish pigtails, till I nudge him to get off. He slaps at my hand.
"Don't touch me,"
he snaps.
"What did you say?"
I growl. He stands fast, his nose coming only to my chin, and speaks very quietly so only we can hear.
"Listen, big man. I am of the Gens Valiae. My pure blood goes back to the conquering. I could buy and sell you with my weekly allowance. So you don't demean me in this little game like all the others, you schoolyard king."
Then louder so others can hear.
"I do as I like, because I took this castle for you and slept in a dead horse so we could take Minerva. I deserve to have some fun."
I lean close. 3 pints.
He rolls his eyes.
"Whatever are you growling about?"
"That's how much blood I'm about to make you swallow."
"Well, might makes right,"
he chuckles, and turns his back on me. Then, mastering my anger, I tell the members of my army that they will never be slaves in this game again, so long as they wear my wolfskin. If they don't like that notion, they can clear out.
None do, but that's expected.
They want to win, but to follow my orders, to understand that I don't think I'm some high and mighty emperor, their proud hearts need to feel valued. So I make sure they know they are. I pay each student a specific compliment, one they remember forever.
Even when I am ruining their society at the vanguard of a billion screaming reds, they will tell their children that Darrow of Mars once clapped them on the shoulder and paid them a compliment.
The defeated students from House Ceres watch me free my army's slaves, and they gape. They don't understand. They recognize me, but they don't comprehend why there isn't a single other Mars student, or why I'm in power, or why I think it is allowed to free slaves. While they are still gaping, Mustang enslaves them with the symbol of House Minerva, and they become doubly confused.
"Win me a fortress, and you get your freedom too,"
I tell them. Their bodies are different from ours, softer from much bread and little meat.
"But you must be starving for some venison and wild meat. Some protein is missing in your diets, I think."
We brought plenty to share. We free several slaves taken by House Ceres months prior. There are few, but most are House Mars or Juno. They find this new alliance strange, but it is an easy pill to swallow after months of toiling in the ovens. The night ends on a sour note, as I am woken an hour into sleep. Mustang sits on the edge of my bed as my eyes flutter open. When I see her, I feel a spike of terror in me, assuming she's come for a different reason. That her hand on my leg means something simple, something human. Instead, she brings me news I wished never to hear again. Tactus flouted my authority and tried to rape a Ceres slave during the night. Milia caught him, and Mustang barely stopped her from cutting Tactus 1,000 different ways. Everyone is up in arms.
"It's bad," Mustang says.
"The Diana students are in their war gear and are about to try to take him back from Milia and Pax."
"They're mad enough to fight Pax?"
"Yeah.
I'll get dressed.
Please."
I meet her in the Ceres war room 2 minutes later. The table is already carved with my sling blade. I didn't do it, and it's much better work than I could have managed.
"Thoughts?"
I fall into the seat opposite Mustang. We're a council of two. It's times like this I miss Cassius, Roke, Quinn, all of them. Especially Severo.
"When Titus did this, you said we make our own law, if I remember right. You sentenced him to death. So, Are we still doing that? Or are we doing something more convenient?
She asks me, as though she already thinks I'm letting Tactus off the hook. I nod, surprising her. He'll pay, I say.
This... it just pisses me off.
She takes her feet off the table and leans forward to shake her head.
We're meant to be better than this. That's all peerless are supposed to be, transcendent of urges that...
She holds up ironic air quotes.
Enslave the weaker colours.
It isn't about urges. I tap the table in frustration. It's about power.
Tactus is of House Valii, Mustang exclaims. His family is ancient. How much power does that asshole want?
Power over me, I mean. I told him he couldn't do something. Now he's trying to prove that he can do whatever he wants.
So he's not another heathen like Titus?
You've met him. Of course he's a heathen. But no, this was tactical.
Well, the clever shit has put you in a tight spot.
I slap the table. I don't like this. Someone else picking the battle or the battlefield. That's how we will lose.
It's a no-win, really. We can't come out ahead. Someone is going to hate you either way. So we just have to figure out which way is the least damaging. Prime?
What about justice? I ask. Her eyebrows float upward.
What about winning? Isn't that what matters?
You trying to trap me? She grins.
Just testing you.
I frown. Tactus killed Tamara, his primus. Cut her saddle, and then rode over her. He's wicked. He deserves any punishment we give him. Mustang raises her eyebrows as if this is all to be expected.
He sees what he wants, and he takes it.
How admirable, I mutter. She tilts her head at me, lively eyes going over my face.
Rare.
What's that?
I was wrong.
About you.
That's rare.
Am I wrong about Tactus? I ask. Is he wicked really? Or is he just ahead of the curve? Does he just grasp the game better?
No one grasps the game.
Mustang puts her muddy boots on the table again and leans back. Her golden hair falls past her shoulders in a long braid. The fire crackles in the hearth. Her eyes dance over my face. I don't miss my old friends when she smiles like that.
I ask her to explain. No one grasps the game because no one knows the rules. No one follows the same set of rules. It is like life. Some think honor universal, some think laws binding. Others know better. But, in the end, don't those who rise by poison die by poison?
I shrug. In the storybooks. In life, there's no one left to poison them, often.
They expect an eye for an eye, the House Ceres slaves. Punish Tactus, you piss off the Diana kids. They get you a fortress, and you spit on them for it. Remember, as far as they're concerned, Tactus hid in a horse's belly half a day for you when you took my castle. Resentment will swell like a copper bureaucracy. But if you don't punish him, you lose all of Ceres.
Can't do that, I sigh. I failed this test before. I put Titus to death and I thought I was meting out justice. I was wrong.
Tactus is an iron gold. His blood is as old as the society. They look at compassion, at reform, as a disease. He is his family. He will not change. He will not learn. He believes in power. Other colors are not people to him. Lesser golds are not people to him. He is bound to his fate.
Yet I'm a red, acting like a gold. No man is bound to his fate. I can change him. I know I can. But how? What do you think I should do? I ask.
Ha! The Great Reaper.
She slaps her thigh.
When have you ever cared what anyone thinks?
You're not just anyone. She nods and, after a moment, speaks.
I was once told a story by Pliny, my tutor, a ghastly fellow, really, and a politico now, so take this all with a shipload of salt. Anyway, on Earth, there was a man and his camel.
I laugh. She keeps going.
They were travelling across this grand desert full of all sorts of nasties. One day, as the man prepared camp, the camel kicked him for no reason. So the man whipped the camel. The camel's wounds grew infected. It died and left the man stranded.
Hands, camels, you and metaphors. She shrugs.
Without your army, you're a man stranded in a desert. So tread carefully, Reaper.
I speak with Nyla, the Ceres girl, in private. She's a quiet one. Smart as a whip, but not physical in any way. Like a shuddering songbird. Like Leah. She has a bloody swollen lip. It makes me want to castrate Tactus. She didn't come in wicked like the rest. Then again, she got through the passage.
He told me he wanted me to rub his shoulders. Told me to do what he said because he was my master, because he spent blood taking the castle. Then he tried, well, you know.
100 generations of men have used that inhuman logic. The sadness her words create in me makes me miss home. But that happened there, too. I remember the screams that made the soup ladle tremble in my mother's hand. Remember how my cousin earned antibiotics from that gamma. Nyla blinks and stares for a moment at the floor.
I told him I was Mustang's slave. House Minerva's. It's her standard. I didn't have to obey him. He just kept pushing me down. I screamed. He punched me, and he just held my throat till things started to fade, and I barely smelled his wolf cloak anymore. Then that tall girl, Milia, knocked him off, I guess.
She didn't mention that there were other Diana soldiers in the room. Others watched. My army. I gave them power, and this is how they use it. It's my fault. They are mine, but they are wicked. That will not be fixed by punishing one of them. They have to want to be good. What would you like for me to do to him? I ask her. I don't reach out to comfort her. She doesn't need it, even though I think I do. She reminds me of Evie, too. Nyla touches her dirty curls and shrugs.
Nothing.
Nothing isn't enough.
To fix what he tried to do to me. To make it right.
She shakes her head, and her hands clutch her sides.
Nothing is enough.
The next morning, I assemble my army in the Ceres Square. A dozen limp. Few Oriat bones can really be broken because of their strength, so most of the injuries suffered in the assault were superficial. I smell the resentment from Ceres students, from Diana students. It's a cancer that'll eat away at the body of this army, no matter who it is focused on. Pax brings Tactus out and shoves him to his knees. I ask him if he tried to rape Nyla.
Laws are silent in times of war. Tactus draws.
Don't quote Cicero to me, I say.
You are held to a higher standard than a marauding centurion. In that, you're hitting the mark, at least. I am a superior creature, descended from proud stock and glorious heritage. Might makes right, Darrow. If I can take, I may take. If I do take, I deserve to have. This is what peerless believe. The measure of a man is what he does when he has power.
I say loudly.
Just come off it, Reaper.
Tactus replies, confident in himself, as all like him are.
She's a spoil of war. My power took her. And before the strong, bend the weak.
I'm stronger than you, Tactus, I say. So I can do with you as I wish, no? He's silent, realizing he's fallen into a trap. You are from a superior family to mine, Tactus. My parents are dead. I am the sole member of my family. But I am a superior creature to you. He smirks at that. Do you disagree? I toss a knife at his feet and pull my own out. I beg you to voice your concerns. He does not pick his blade up. So, by right of power, I can do with you as I like. I announce that rape will never be permitted, and then I ask Nyla the punishment she would give. As she told me before, she says she wants no punishment. I make sure they know this, so there are no recriminations against her. Tactus and his armed supporters stare at her in surprise. They don't understand why she would not take vengeance, but that doesn't stop them from smiling wolfishly at one another, thinking their chief has dodged punishment. Then I speak. But I say, you get 20 lashes from a leather switch, Tactus. You try to take something beyond the bounds of the game. You gave in to your pathetic animal instincts. Here, that is less forgivable than murder. I hope you feel shame when you look back at this moment 50 years from now and realize your weakness. I hope you fear your sons and daughters knowing what you did to a fellow gold. Until then, 20 lashes will serve. Some of the Diana soldiers step forward in anger, but Pax hefts his axe on his shoulder, and they shrink back, glaring at me. They gave me a fortress, and I'm going to whip their favorite warrior. I see my army dying as Mustang pulls off Tactus's shirt. He stares at me like a snake. I know what evil thoughts he's thinking. I thought them of my floggers, too. I whip him 20 brutal times, holding nothing back. Blood runs down his back. Pax nearly has to hack down one of the Diana soldiers to keep them from charging to stop the punishment. Tactus barely manages to stagger to his feet, wrath burning in his eyes.
A mistake, he whispers to me. Such a mistake.
Then I surprise him. I shove the switch into his hand and bring him close by cupping my hand around the back of his head.
You deserve to have your balls off, you selfish bastard, I whisper to him. This is my army.
This is my army, I say more loudly. This is my army. Its evils are mine as much as yours, as much as they are Tactus's. Every time any of you commit a crime like this, something gratuitous and perverse, you will own it. And I will own it with you, because when you do something wicked, it hurts all of us.
Tactus stands there like a fool. He's confused. I shove him hard in the chest. He stumbles back. I follow him, shoving.
What were you going to do?
I push his hand holding the leather switch back toward his chest.
I don't know what you mean, he murmurs as I shove him. Come on, man. You were going to shove your prick inside someone in my army. Why not whip me while you're at it?
Why not hurt me, too? It'll be easier. Milia won't even try to stab you, I promise.
I shove him again. He looks around. No one speaks.
I strip off my shirt and go to my knees.
The air is cold. Knees on stone and snow. My eyes lock with Mustang's. She winks at me, and I feel like I can do anything. I tell Tactus to give me 25 lashes. I've taken worse. His arms are weak, and so is his will to do it. It still stings, but I stand up after 5 lashes and give the lash to Pax. They start the count at 6.
Start over, I shout. A little rapist cur can't swing hard enough to hurt me.
But Pax bloody well can. My army cries in protest. They don't understand.
Golds don't do this. Golds don't sacrifice for one another. Leaders take, they do not give.
My army cries out again. I ask them, how is this worse than the rape they were all so comfortable with?
Is not Nyla now one of us? Is she not part of the body?
Like Reds are. Like Obsidians are. Like all the colours are. Pax tries to go light, but it's Pax, so when he's done, my back looks like chewed goat meat. I stand up, do everything I can to prevent myself from wobbling. I'm seeing stars. I want to wail. I want to cry. Instead, I tell them that anyone who does anything vile, they know what I mean, will have to whip me like this in front of the entire army.
I see how they look at Tactus now. How they look at Pax. How they look at my back.
You do not follow me because I am the strongest. Pax is. You do not follow me because I am the brightest. Mustang is. You follow me because you do not know where you are going. I do.
I motion Tactus to come toward me. He wavers, pale, confused as a newborn lamb. Fear marks his face. Fear of the unknown. Fear of the pain I willingly bore. Fear when he realizes how different he is from me.
Don't be afraid, I tell him.
I pull him forward into a hug.
We are blood brothers, you little shit.
Blood brothers.
I am learning.
Chapter 37 South.
Shit on a pike!
I yelp, as Mustang puts salve on my back in the war room. She flicks my back with a finger.
Why?
I moan.
The measure of a man is what he does when he has power.
She laughs.
You mock him for Sisera. And then spit out Plato.
Plato was older. He trumps Cicero. Ow!
And what was that about blood brothers? That means absolutely nothing. You might as well have said you were pinecone cousins.
Nothing binds like pain shared.
Well, here's some more of that.
She pulls a bit of leather out of a wound. I yelp.
Pain shared,
I shudder.
Not inflicted. Psychotic. Ow!
You sound like a girl. Thought martyrs were tough. Then again, you could be barking mad. Fever when you were stabbed, probably. You traumatized Pax, by the way. He's crying. Good work.
I actually hear Pax's sniffles from the armory.
But it did work, eh?
Sure, Messiah. You made yourself a cult.
She mocks dryly.
They're building idols to you in the square, kneeling in supplication of your wisdom. Oh, mighty lord. I will laugh when they find out they don't like you, and can have you flogged any time they do a naughty. Now hold still, you pixie, and stop talking. You annoy me.
You know, when we graduate, maybe you should look into being a pink. Your touch is so tender.
She smirks.
Send me to a rose garden. Now that would tickle my father pink.
Oh, stop squealing. The pun wasn't that bad.
The next day, I organize my army. I give Mustang the duty of choosing 6 squads of 3 scouts each. I have 56 soldiers. More than half are slaves. I make her put a Ceres in each group, the most ambitious. They get 6 of the 8 comm units I found in Ceres' war room. The things are primitive, crackling earpieces, but they give my army something I've never had, an evolution beyond smoke signals.
So, I'm assuming you have a plan besides just going south like some Mongol horde,
Mustang says.
Of course. We're going to find the House Apollo.
True to my promise to Fitchner.
The scouts strike out that night from House Ceres, fanning out to the south in 6 directions. My army follows at dawn, just before the winter sun rises. I will not squander this opportunity. Winter has forced the houses into fortresses. Deep snows and hidden ravines make heavy cavalry sluggish, less useful. The game has slowed, but I won't. Mars and Jupiter can battle it out for all I care. I'll come back for both later.
At nightfall on the second day of our move south, we see the fortress of Juno, already conquered by Jupiter. It lies to the west on a tributary of the Argos. Mountains frame it. Beyond that are the wintry 6-kilometer-high walls of Valles Marineris. My scouts bring me news of 3 enemy scouts, cavalry, in the fringes of the woods to the east. They think it is Pluto, the jackal's men. The horses are black, and the hair of the riders is dyed the same. They wear bones in their hair. I hear that they rattle like bamboo wind chimes as they ride. Whoever the riders are, they never come close, never fall into my traps. A girl is said to lead them. She rides a silver horse draped with a leather mantle sewn with unbleached bones. Apparently the medbots are not so good in the south. Lilith, I think. She and her scouts disappear south as a larger warband appears from the southeast and skirts along the great woods. These are now real armies of heavy horse. A single rider comes forward from the larger warband. He carries the archer pennant of Apollo. His hair is long and unbraided, his face hard from the winter winds that roll in from the southern sea. A cut on his forehead nearly claimed both his eyes. Eyes that stare now at me, like 2 burning coals set in a face of hammered bronze. I walk forward to meet him, after telling my army to look as weathered and pathetic as humanly possible. Pax manages poorly. Mustang makes him go to his knees so he looks relatively normal. She stands on his shoulders for comic relief and starts a snowball fight as the emissary comes near. It's a rowdy, foolish affair, and it makes my army look wonderfully vulnerable. I fake a limp, toss away my wolf cloak, fake a shiver, make sure my pathetic durosteel sword looks more a cane than a weapon. Bend my long body as he approaches, and I spare a look back at my playing army. My look of embarrassment is almost split in half with a laugh. I swallow it down. His voice is like steel dragged over rough stone. No humor to him, no recognition that we're all teenagers playing a game, and that the real world still flows on outside this valley. In the south, things have happened to make them forget. So when I offer him a self-effacing smile, he does not return it. He is a man, not a boy. I think it is the first time I've seen someone fully transformed.
And you are but a ragged remnant from the north.
The Apollo Primus, Novas, scoffs. He tries guessing the house we hail from. I've made sure the Ceres standard is the one he sees. His eyes flicker.
He wants it for his own glory. He also happily notices that more than half my army of 56 is enslaved.
You will not last long in the south. Perhaps you would like shelter from the cold, warm food, and bed. The south is harsh.
I can't wager it'll be worse than the north, man, I say. They have raised us, and Pulsarm are there. Proctor's turned their favor from us.
They are not there to favor you, weakling, he says. They help those who help themselves.
We helped ourselves as best we could, I say meekly.
He spits on the ground.
Little child, do not whine here. The South does not listen to tears.
But, the South cannot be worse than the North. I shudder and tell him of the Reaper from the Highlands. A monster, a brute, a killer, evil, evil things.
He nods when I speak of the Reaper. So, he has heard of me.
The Reaper of yours is dead. A shame. I would have liked to test myself against him.
He was a demon, I protest.
We have our own demons here. A one-eyed monster in the woods, and a worse monster in the mountains to the west. The Jackal.
He confides as he continues with his pitch. I would be allowed to join Apollo as a mercenary, not a slave. Never a slave. He would help me defeat the Jackal, then retake the north. We would be allies. He thinks me weak and stupid. I look at my ring. The Proctor of Apollo will know what I say here. I want him to know I am going to ruin his house. If he wants to try to stop me, this is his invitation.
No, I say to Novas. My family would shame me. I would be nothing to them if I joined you. No. I'm sorry.
I smile inside.
We have enough food to march through your lands. If you let us, we will brook no—
He slaps me across the face.
You are a pixie, he says. Stiffen your quivering lip. You embarrass your color.
He leans toward me over his saddle pommel.
You are caught between giants, and you will be crushed. But make a man of yourself before we come for you. I do not fight children.
It is then that Mustang throws a snowball at his head. Naturally, her aim is true, and her laugh is loud. Novas does not react. All that moves is his horse beneath him, as it wheels to take him back to his roving warband. I watch the man go, and feel disquiet seep into me.
"Ride on home, little archer," Tactus calls out. "Ride home to your mummy."
Novas rejoins his 30 heavy horse. Our only cavalry is our scouts. They cannot stand against iron blades and iron lances at full tilt, even with the deep snowbanks to muddle their heavier horses. Our weapons are still durosteel. Armor no better than duroplate or wolfskin. I don't even wear armor. I don't plan on fighting a battle where I need to for a while. We've not had a bounty after capturing Ceres' fortress and their standard. The Proctors have forsaken me, but the weather has not. Normally, infantry falls like dry wheat to cavalry, but the snow and its treacherous depths protect us. We camp on the western bank of the river that night, nearer the mountains, away from the open plains in front of the dark, great woods. Apollo's heavy cavalry now has to cross the frozen river in the darkness if they want to raid our camp as we sleep. I knew they'd try when they thought us weak, ripe for the taking. They failed miserably. Arrogance. As dusk settled, I had Pax and his strongmen take axes out to soften the thick ice of the river bordering our camp.
We hear hoarse screams and plunging bodies in the night. Medbots wind down to save lives. Those boys and girls are out of the game. We continue south, aiming for where my scouts guess Apollo's castle lies. At night, we eat well. Soups are made from the meat and bones of animals my scouts bring back. Bread is kept stored in makeshift packs. It is the food that keeps my army content. As the great Corsican once said, an army marches on its stomach. Then again, he didn't fare so well in the winter. Mustang walks beside me as I lead the column. Though she's swaddled with wolf cloaks as thick as my own, she hardly comes up to my shoulder. And when we walk through deep snow, it's almost a laugh to see her try to keep a pace with me. But if I slow, I earn a scowl. Her braid bounces as she keeps up. When we reach easier ground, she glances over at me. Her pert nose is red as a cherry in the cold, but her eyes look like hot honey.
"You haven't been sleeping well," she says.
"When do I ever?"
"When you slept next to me. You cried out the first week in the woods. After that, you slept like a little baby."
"Is this you inviting me back?" I ask.
"I never told you to leave."
She waits.
"So,
why did you?" "You distract me," I say.
She laughs lightly before drifting back to walk beside Pax. I'm left confused both by my response and by her words. I never thought she'd care one way or the other if I left.
A stupid smile spreads on my face. Tactus catches it.
"Smitten as a lovebird," he hums.
I hurl a handful of snow at his head.
"Not a word more."
"But I need another word. A serious word."
He steps closer. Takes a deep breath.
"Does the pain in your back give you a hard-on like it gives me?"
He laughs. "Are you ever serious?" His sharp eyes sparkle.
"Oh, you don't want me serious.
How about obedient?"
He claps his hands together.
"Well, you know I'm not prime fond of the idea of a leash."
"Do you see a leash?" I ask, pointing to his forehead where his slave mark could be.
"And since you know I don't need a leash, it may do to tell me where we are bound. I would be more effective that way."
He's not challenging me, because he speaks quietly. After the whipping we both received, he's taken to me in a frighteningly loyal way. Despite all the smiles and sneers and laughs, I have his obedience. And his question is sincere.
"We're going to ruin Apollo," I tell him.
"But why Apollo?" he asks. "Are we merely checking off the houses at random, or should I know something?"
The tone in his voice makes me cock my head.
He's always reminded me of some kind of giant cat. Maybe it's the frighteningly casual way in which he lopes along, like he'd kill something without even tensing his muscles. Or maybe it's because I can imagine him coiling up on a couch and licking himself clean.
"I've seen things in the snow, Leaper,"
he says quietly.
"Impressions in the snow, to be specific. And these impressions are not made by feet."
"Paws? Hooves?"
"No, dear leader."
He steps closer.
"Linear impressions."
I get his meaning.
"Grav boots flying very low. Do tell me, why are the proctors following us? And why are they wearing ghost cloaks?"
All his whispers mean nothing because of our rings, yet he doesn't know that.
Because they are afraid of us. I tell him. Afraid of you, you mean? He watches me. What do you know that I don't? What do you tell Mustang that you don't tell us?
You want to know, Tactus?
I've not forgotten his crimes. But I take his shoulder and bring him close like he's a brother. I know the power touch can have.
Then knock House Apollo off the gory damned map, and I will tell you.
His lips curl into a feral smile.
A pleasure, good Reaper.
We stay away from the open plains, and cling to the river as we move farther south, listening to our scouts relay news of enemy holdings over the comms. Apollo seems to control everything. All we see of the Jackal are his small bands of scouts. There's something strange about his soldiers, something that chills the heart. For the thousandth time, I think of my enemy. What makes the faceless boy so frightening? Is he tall, lean, thick, fast, ugly? What gives him his reputation, his name? No one seems to know. The Pluto scouts never come near, despite the temptation we offer them. I have Pax carry the banner of Ceres high, so that every Apollo cavalryman in the surrounding miles can see it glimmer. Each realizes the chance for glory. Parties of cavalry dash into us. Scouts think they can pry our pride away and gain themselves status in their house. They come stupidly in threes, in fours, and we ruin them with the Ceres archers, or Minerva's spearmen, or with buried pikes in the snow. Little by little, we gnaw at them as the wolf gnaws at the elk. Always we let them escape, though. I want them angry as hell when I arrive on their doorstep. Slaves like them would slow us down. That night, Pax and Mustang sit with me by a small fire and tell me of their lives outside the school. Pax is a riot when you get him going. A surprisingly energetic talker, with a penchant for complimenting everything in his stories, including the villains. So half the time you don't know who is good and who is bad. He tells us of a time he broke his father's scepter in half, and another time he was mistaken for an obsidian and nearly shipped off to the Agoge, where they train in space combat.
"I notion you could say I've always dreamt of being an obsidian," he rumbles.
When he was a boy, he would sneak from his family's summer manor in New Zealand, Earth, and join the obsidians as they performed the Nagoge, the nightly necessity of their training, in which they looted and stole in order to supplement the paltry diet they were given at the Agoge. He would scrap and fight with them for morsels of food. He says he would always win. That is, until he met Helga. Mustang and I lock eyes and try not to burst out with laughs as he waxes grandiloquent on Helga's ample proportions, her thick fists, her ample thighs.
"There's was a large love," I tell Mustang.
"A love to shake the earth," she replies.
I'm woken the next morning by Tactus. His eyes are cold as the dawn's freeze.
"Our horses have decided to run away. All of them."
He guides us to the Ceres boys and girls who were watching the horses.
"None of them saw a thing. One minute the horses were there, the next they were gone."
"Poor horses must be confused," Pax says sorrowfully. "It was stormy last night. Perhaps they ran for safety to the woods."
Mustang hauls up the ropes that held the horses during the night, pulled in half.
"Stronger than they looked," she says dubiously.
"Tactus?"
I nod my head to the scene. He looks over at Pax and Mustang before answering.
"There are foot tracks."
"But why waste my breath?"
He shrugs.
"You know what I'm going to say."
proctors pulled the ropes apart. I do not tell my army what happened, but rumor spreads quickly when people huddle together for warmth. Mustang does not ask questions even though she knows I'm not telling her something. After all, I did not simply find the medicine I gave her in the Northwoods. I try to look at this newest kink as a test. When the rebellion begins, things like this will happen. How do I react? Breathe the anger out. Breathe it out and move. Easier said than done for me. We move to the woods to the east. Without horses, we've no more play to make in the plains near the river. My scouts tell me the castle of Apollo is near. How will I take it, without horses, without any element of speed? As night falls, another kink reveals itself. The soup pots we brought from Ceres to cook over our fires are cracked through. All of them. And the bread which we kept so securely wrapped in paper in our packs is full of weevils. They crunch like juicy seeds as I eat a supper of bread. To the drafters it will look an unfortunate turn of events. But I know it is something more. The proctors warn me to turn back.
Why did Cassius betray you?
Mustang asks me that night as we sleep in a hollow beneath a snowdrift. Our Diana sentries watch the camp's perimeter from the trees. Don't lie to me. I betrayed him, actually. I say. It was his brother that I had to kill in the passage. Her eyes widen. And after a moment, she nods.
I had a brother die. It wasn't the same thing. But a death like that, it changes things.
Did it change you?
No, she says, as though she just realized it. But it changed my family, made them into people I don't recognize sometimes. That's life, I suppose.
She pulls back suddenly.
Why did you tell Cassius that you killed his brother? Are you that mad, Reaper?
I didn't tell him slag. The proctors did it through the jackal. Gave him a holocube.
I see.
Her eyes go cold.
So they are cheating for the arch-governor's son.
I leave her and the warmth of the fire to piss in the woods. The air is cold and crisp. Owls hoot in the branches, making me feel watched in the night.
Darrow,
Mustang says from the darkness. I wheel about. Mustang, did you follow me? Darrow. Not Reaper. Something is amiss. Something in the way she says my name, that she says my name at all. It is like seeing a cat bark. But I can't see her in the darkness.
I thought I saw something,
she says, still in shadow, voice emanating from the deeper woods.
It's just over here. It'll blow your mind.
I follow the sound of her voice. Mustang? Don't leave the camp. Mustang?
We've already left it, darling.
Around me the trees stretch ominously upward. Their branches reach for me. The woods are silent. Dark. This is a trap. It is not Mustang. The proctors? The jackal? Someone watches me. When something watches you, and you don't know where it is, there is only one sensible thing to do. Change the bloody damn paradigm. Try to even the playing field. Make it have to look for you. I break into movement. I sprint back toward my army. Then I dash behind a tree, scramble up it, and wait. Watching. Knives out. Ready to throw. Cloak curled about me. Silence. Then the snapping of twigs. Something moves through the woods, something huge.
Pax!
I call down. No response. Then I feel a strong hand touch my shoulder. The branch I crouch in sinks with the new weight as a man deactivates his ghost cloak and appears from thin air. I've seen him before. His curly blonde hair is cut tight to his head and frames his dusky, godlike face. His chin is carved from marble, and his eyes twinkle evilly, bright as his armor. Proctor Apollo. The huge thing moves again below us.
Darrow, Darrow, Darrow.